Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to StubbsCast. StubbsCast.com is the name of the website. My name is KeithStubbs.com, resident of Ogden, Utah, 84403 if you're checking at home. Thanks for tuning in. We do appreciate it. With me right now, my very, very special guest. His name's Orny Adams. He's a guy that I hesitated to ask to do this podcast, and I enjoy this gentleman. Let me first of all say this. I think he's funny. I think he's a great comic. I think he's underrated, and I don't. But I still feel like it should have been easier for me to ask you to do my podcast. I think you did so. You agreed reluctantly. Why do I feel like you're? I'm putting you on the defensive, by the way, starting out. Why was there hesitance? And I, once again, I'm glad you're doing this. I say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I want you on my podcast, but was there hesitation?
First of all, I want to say hi to all the Jews in Ogden, my people. Why did you hesitate to ask me? What was your fear? Let's confront your fear.
Okay, let's dig
yes.
it. Let's dig it.
Yes.
So what you did, you turned everything around back onto me is what you did.
Uh-huh.
First of all, let me take off my spectacles. I'm not used to them yet. These are new. Mm-hmm. Do I look more sophisticated with these spectacles?
You look
on?
Like a real club owner now.
Okay, but let me just tell you something. let's go here, then we'll go back to where about the Jews in Ogden, okay? I tell you, you overspoke. It's actually Jew in Ogden. There's just one. There's Greeks. That's the thing.
Uh-huh.
The Greeks are Utah's Jews,
uh-huh.
is what it is. So in the state of Utah, there's Greeks everywhere. It's like, well, we don't have the Jews, but we got the Greeks.
That's great.
But here's the deal with this, is that a club owner, that's true. But my passion is comedy. I love comedy. I still perform comedy. I feel sometimes people look at me as only the club owner. And of course, that is where our relationship began. But I still see myself, and maybe I'm delusional, but I don't think I am. But I still see myself as a comic. And a club owner is something I do to facilitate my need for business, the business side of me, but comedy and a comedian is what
is
I am, believe it or not.
We are getting deep into a lot of your insecurities.
That's
and this is what I like about this. Let me break it down for you, Keith.
I'm going to break it down for you in a second, but go ahead.
If you could just take a deep breath there and relax for a minute. Would you ever wear those glasses on stage?
I have.
You have?
Yes.
That's a mistake. Because you look like a club owner with those glasses. Without those glasses, you're a comic. If you just said, how do I look today? I go, you look like a headliner. You look like a nationally touring headliner that should be on The Tonight Show every few months.
Okay.
You put the glasses on, I want you to write me a check.
Exactly. Okay, so tonight.
And a big check.
Tonight when I write you a check, because
yes.
I will be doing that as a club owner. We've made that very clear. You want the glasses on. Are you going to run to the bank to cash the check? Are you one of these guys? I've only had a couple of guys. In my life, in the history of comedy club, take the check and they have the app on their phone and right on the spot do the old zibbity doo dah so it deposits. Because I wonder if they think that if they don't hammer the check right away that it's going to bounce.
No, I do that because you feel like there's a sense of completion. What I like to do
is that really the reason.
That is the reason. Okay. Oh, I'm not worried about the money
not
going through. That's not my concern at all. What I like to do, and let this be a little tip for some of the young listeners out there, the comics, what I like to do is I like to, they give me the check, I take the picture in the green room, I deposit it, mm-hmm. and then I like to walk right back into the owner's office and I go, you know what? I don't need your money. And I tear it up and I throw it on the ground. Keep your money. I'm doing this because I love comedy.
Well, I'll tell you something. You killed it last night. Standing ovation. Big crowd. Not a big crowd. Not a big crowd. You know what I like about you, Orny? There's many things I like about you. First of all, let's go back early. I did not know what to think about you. I saw that comedian thing, the Seinfeld thing. I was trying to explain that to my wife last night. This is my take on it.
Uh-huh.
Can I give you my take on it?
Of course.
I don't know Seinfeld, but I know you.
Okay.
I feel like I know you.
You want to put the glasses on for this?
I'm doing this as a guy that is appreciative of what you do. I feel like, and I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like maybe you feel like that perhaps you were misrepresented maybe a little bit maybe in this documentary, or was that an accurate portrayal of who you are as a comedian and as a person?
Well, you know, I haven't seen this in, this predates 9/11, this documentary.
Right.
So I haven't seen it, but I do know I'm a completely different person.
Of course, we all are, right?
We've evolved. I'm 44 years old. I was 29, I think, when we filmed it. I was arrogant. I was, as the reviews said, bereft of humility, which I can't argue with. And I think if I saw it, I would be turned off by that guy. But I also understand that guy. And I also understand that part of my journey was being that guy to get to where I am today. And I think sometimes when you feel like you have something inside of you that you want to get out and people aren't taking it seriously and they aren't listening, you're going to do whatever it takes. And there's a frustration there. It's just like when you're a little kid and the girl isn't flirting back with you, you throw gum in her hair. You know, it's very similar to that type of behavior. I was acting out. And I think that a lot of people have come up to me and they say they relate to. A lot of people who are successful related to how I was in that documentary. Do I blame people like you for feeling a certain way? Not at all. And I own everything I said and that was it. But I also, which was interesting because I was able to take the character that was in Comedian and be that guy on Teen Wolf. I would say things to get a reaction, and people thought I was serious. So when I'm walking towards a town car, and I say, I have to open my own door, that's a joke.
Of course.
I can say that now. I know the right intonation. At the time, it didn't play that way. And so people are like, who's this guy? He thinks he has to open his own. You know what I mean? So
how did you end up with that gig? Did you know Jerry Seinfeld, or did someone scout you out? Or were there other people that they were looking at to fill that role in that documentary?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were looking for something to counter the greatness of Jerry Seinfeld. You know, the guy's doing a documentary on himself. And I think that's the first thing that should be examined is, you know, who's paying for the thing.
So there's no way in the world he's going to do it and make himself look like the jerk. So he has to try to find someone else to at least counterbalance what what he whatever it is he does.
Right. And I think that Jerry, in all fairness, saw me as a younger version of himself. You know, I was a guy who was hungry, was still fighting for it, and, you know, I bet he was envious of me. And I can see why, because I'm able to play the clubs and he's not able to play the clubs. You know what I mean? He can't go in and just test out new material. You know, yeah. I was doing stuff last night on the second show on Grape Nuts. You know, and I could tell honestly by the crowd's reaction that they liked it. And they weren't laughing because I'm Jerry Seinfeld from the sitcom. They, you know, and I'm able to, at its most honest, boiled down level, do stand-up comedy. I'm able to take the trains in New York City. I'm able to walk around the Valley Field Mall and not be recognized nonstop and photographed. So that allows me to create on a level that he isn't able to. And I think there's some envy there. But what was happening was I had achieved a point of notoriety within New York City, and I was getting shows at every single club. I was doing 22 shows on a weekend. Goodness. Thursday to Sunday. Nice. I'd write a bit on Thursday, and by Sunday I was sick of telling it. And what happened was it was me and Louis C.K. and was kicking it at the time. It was a bunch of us. We're all going to every club, and I was closing shows, and the clubs were working with my schedule, which was amazing. The Comedy Cellar would move a spot for me so I could do something at Stand Up New York. It was I couldn't believe that I had achieved this level. And what could ever knock me down? Well, I'll tell you what. Seinfeld. Seinfeld decides he's done with his show. He's going to do a new hour. And he comes back and he starts working the clubs. And, you know, he's bumping me. And I'm closing, like, that Saturday 9 o'clock show, and I get bumped, and all my friends are there. And, you know, to be honest, they're happier to see him than me, and that's hurtful in a way. And the camera crew kept seeing me get frustrated that I was getting bumped.
So were you saying things?
Yeah.
You were murmuring?
Well, you know me. I don't keep my mouth
shut.
Of course.
So what was happening, basically, for those that are uninitiated? You had a set. You were booked to do a gig at a place at whatever the comedy club was. Seinfeld walks in, and just like happens at any comedy club, it's like whoever's coming up next isn't coming up next anymore. Now Jerry Seinfeld's taking the stage.
Right.
All of a sudden, your friends are there. Mm-hmm. You're ready to go up. You feel like you have a lot to offer, but it really doesn't matter at that point.
Right.
Because he is who he is, and you are who you are. So then you would say, crying out loud, come on, man. Who cares? Can't you go on later, or can't you at least call in and schedule your set so I don't have to get bumped?
Well, and the other thing, there's always been a problem in this business where people or fans adore who they think they should adore. They're not going out and finding the best comedy. You know, like if I released a special today and I self-released it and I got it up on YouTube, or, you know, I put it out somehow, people would watch it and think it was funny. It wouldn't be widely seen. But a lot of people would look at it and go, well, if this guy was really good, wouldn't this be on Netflix? Wouldn't this be on Comedy Central? Wouldn't this be on HBO? And they wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to have that behind you for the consumer to think you're any good.
So how do you get that behind you?
I don't. You're asking me. I'm the biggest example of how not to get it behind you, I guess.
Do you regret doing that? That documentary.
No, not
then?
At all. I don't regret anything.
So when the camera crew was there.
So the camera crew asked me what I thought, and I said, I got to be honest with you. I don't think he's that funny. I think his style is very similar to what he was doing before the show, and comedy has evolved. And good luck following me. And they showed him, and he said, you got to follow this guy. He's the only one that has the balls to criticize me. And to this day, calls me the most honest man he's ever met. He calls me the comedy skeleton because it's like, you know, I guess in biology class, they used to have the human skeleton or whatever, mm-hmm. the invisible man. I'm the invisible comic. And he followed me, and so distracting, that camera. I don't know why. Every time. I hate having my picture taken. So anyway, they paid me between $500 and $600 a day to tape me, which is an enormous amount of money when you're, you know, going to Poughkeepsie for $300
right.
a weekend,
oh, yeah.
and you're paying your own expenses. So it was groundbreaking for me, the money. And you go, you know, Seinfeld's behind me, and Seinfeld's manager's behind me, and you think, here we go. And you know what happened was I probably helped to build the hype up to a certain level, and I didn't deliver. And I can't blame, you know, I was given a certain amount of exposure, and I didn't capitalize. I can't, you know.
What could you have done differently, do you think? Because you got a Letterman out of the thing, and you're with Seinfeld on a lot of these appearances. What could you have done, do you think, differently to take it in a different direction than where?
Well, I can tell you with 100% certainty, I could have ingratiated myself in the comedy community much more. And that's something that I didn't do because I was insecure. It's something I didn't do because I didn't understand how it all worked. But, you know, I was a guy who I never had comedy friends. I lived in New York City. I would chum around with these guys, Patrice O'Neill. I would see Jim Norton. I would hang out with Attell, Chappelle. These are all the comics that we're all working together. Rich Voss and Lisa Lampanelli. But I never hung out with them. You know, like I never went out with them afterwards and hung out. I didn't. I went home. I continued to write. I looked at the tapes. I analyzed what I did, and then I went to bed, and I got up early and did it again, and then did my shows. And I didn't have a group, and people didn't understand me. And I also never went up to somebody and said, great set. One was because maybe I didn't think it was a great set, and two, I never watched other people. I never wanted to be affected, and that might have been a mistake too. And so now I go out of my way to watch people and say, hey, great set, and you know, point out something that I think that they've done is good. And
so do you believe, so socially, because obviously you've got the comedy chops, there's no doubt about that, and you hang out with that group, all those names that you named, I know all of those guys,
yeah.
but socially you didn't go out to Denny's afterwards and yeah. hang out with them or go to a bar
yeah.
or sit at the club for another couple hours.
Right.
You went off and just did your own thing.
Yeah, I never felt comfortable around that group. And so I had my own friends. I had my college friends that were in New York City, and I hung out with them. Also, it was to have a separate life. It was have a separate life, and I didn't want to feel like, you know, like everything was comedy. And it affected me because I remember we did a screening for all the comics in New York City and how they treated me afterwards. Had they liked me, you can do whatever you want. If I had a group, if I was, you know, now there's the hipsters, but if I had been part of that, and I think they always enjoyed what I did on stage, but this gave them an opportunity to dislike me. And the comedy community loves to dislike people.
Of course, yeah.
And it was T-ball. You want to dislike me? Here you go. My mistake was, in baseball, if you point the right field, you go up to bat and you point to the right field and you knock it out of the park, mathematically, you can't take away that home run from that person. And what I never realized was I thought it didn't matter what I did off stage as long as I delivered on stage, because I got away with that my entire life. In school, I was a wise ass, but I did my work and I got A's. And the teachers hated giving me A's, but I loved it. I loved that dynamic. And I thought that's what would carry me my whole life. I would do comedy, and no matter what. And you saw my set last night. I did it in front of a half full room. I treated it like I was in front of 5,000 people in a theater. And I pounded out and didn't take a breath for an hour. And the crowd enjoyed it.
You know what? Mm-hmm. This reminds me of my brother coaches college football and has for 30 years, and his personality is a lot like yours. He is not like me at all. He's his own dude. He doesn't have a lot of friends. He's not very social, doesn't go out and hang out with guys. And in the coaching business, and we're talking major college football coaching, mm-hmm. it's a lot of social and it's a lot of hanging out. And if this guy gets fired, then he brings his buddies into this. And one of my brother's biggest regrets is that he did not become, and not that he wanted to, but he looks back and says, man, my career, I could have done better as a college football coach and gone different places if socially I had hung out more with those people. And it's not that he didn't like him, but that just wasn't his life. His life was his life. He had, not different than you, but he had a wife and kids, and that's what he wanted to do. And he didn't want to go out after practice and go sit at a bar for 4 hours with these college football coaches. So when things did get funky, like if someone got fired mm-hmm. or he mm-hmm. lost his job yeah. or whatever, he wasn't on the speed dial to get the next gig. Why? Because he didn't hang out with that group.
Right.
So he didn't have that group of people to back him up. And it sounds a lot like
right.
What you went through.
Right, because you said, well, I didn't know what to make of this guy the first time I booked him. Now, had you for years heard from every comic that came through, he's not like that. He got screwed from that. You know, he's the nicest, you know. Mm-hmm. It's weird because we've battled this for years with my agents. They know that there's some hesitation sometimes, but once I'm booked, you know, they always have me back.
And that's exactly what happened with you, with your agent, Adam Genovizian, with mm-hmm. me. Because Adam would say, man, we were looking at the calendar. He said, how about Orny Adams? I'm like, yeah. That was my reaction. That's yeah. my honest reaction. I'm going, really? He goes, and he knew. Yeah. He knew exactly what. Yeah. I didn't have to say anything. He knew what I was thinking because I saw what everyone else saw. And he said, man, you've got to give him a chance. He's a crusher and he's a great guy. And I went, and finally I did it. Finally, I booked you, and this is your third time here, and you are a crusher and a good guy, even though I still hesitated to ask you to do this podcast.
Why did you hesitate?
There's still something. I don't know what it is. It's probably both of us in our own little weird, insecure ways, right? Because you basically admitted that you do your own thing and have mm-hmm. your own world, and I get it and yep. totally respect that, and I want to be – I'm a club owner, but also I'm a comic, and I truly like what I mean. Like, I love what you do. I have there's comics that I love what they do, and I want them to know that I'm just not BSing them. I'm not just some club guy going, man, oh, you're funny, great set. I don't say that to everyone either, by mm-hmm. the way. I'll say, oh, the audience liked you. Uh-huh. Believe me, if I say that, that tells me that maybe the audience did like you, but I can tell you. I'll pass.
Well, it's funny because I've been monitoring your Twitter for the last few weeks to see how you describe how the comic did on stage. And I wanted to see if I would get the same accolades, the same wording, the same, you know. So it's
but
interesting.
But I post.
But why would you be afraid? Did you think I was going to say no?
You know what? Here's the other side of it. I don't want to put you in a weird position because here's the other side. As a guy that does book the club and I pay you, I don't want you to feel. And I'll tell you, I don't want you to feel obligated to do this just because. Like if you said no, it wouldn't be like, oh, well then I don't ever want him here again because that's not the case. That's not the case at all. I respect.
Not with all those ticket sales I had last night.
I did it
because I like you and I respect you.
And I appreciate that.
And believe me, I say no to podcasts in every city. And I have Genovizian send out the email. He just doesn't feel comfortable because every club has a podcast now. I just don't need to say what I just said earlier over and over and over again. You're a comic. You get it. You guys are comics. You get what I'm saying. I respect you guys. I don't need to be on a podcast repeating myself. You know, this is here now. If I die in a plane crash tomorrow, it will be quoted,
you're
and then that's
die.
The end of it.
You're Let's.
Well, is it going to be windy like it is today? It's crazy out there.
It's going to clear up a little.
What's
bit.
What's our excuse for people not coming to the show tonight? Last night it was somebody said because it's always slow. I'm always there at the slow time yeah. of year at the club. Keith goes. You know what? It is deer hunting season here.
it is opening of deer hunting season. Yeah. I'll back him up.
Okay,
on that one.
Let me say this. You know, I'm not.
I know we have a game.
I'm not from here.
The Utes game.
Yeah, that's tonight. That's a nice excuse.
Great.
But I'm not from here either. I'm mm-hmm. from South Carolina. I was raised in Charleston, and I remember that when I came to Utah, mm-hmm. I will never forget it. I opened in August, at the end of August. This was in 1996 when I opened my first little comedy club. It was in Ogden, Utah.
Yeah.
End of August, it was fine. September was good. And then in October, it was like, like, where do I go? And my thing, someone said, oh, it's Deer Widow Weekend. That's what they call it, Deer Widow Weekend.
What is that?
And that is when all the dudes go out, allegedly, and they all go hunting, and all the ladies are just at home. So unless...
And they say that here? I'm going to say that tonight,
that's
then.
That's what Deer Widow...
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
You're Utah, Rodney.
Yes,
Rodney,
I am.
Well, then shouldn't all the ladies, shouldn't we have ladies' night?
Well, typically that was what would happen, was there would be ladies' night events during. That was usually when Chippendales would show up in Utah.
By the way, how great is it that I scolded the photographer and he's now gone pouting? It's the greatest. It's the greatest thing. Now he hates me. He's probably on Twitter. He's the same guy from Comedian. Nothing's changed. Doesn't want his picture taken. Who is he? Doesn't want his picture taken. Everybody. Chris Kattan didn't say anything.
Bless his heart. Man. Bless his heart. Here's the thing I found out, though, after opening the club. October, I have never seen a state that is, at one side, so religious, just a very religious state. You know that.
Yeah.
Utah, Mormons and everything.
Yeah.
And not just the Mormons, but everybody else is even religious, too. But I've never seen a state so wrapped up into Halloween and wearing all the masks and doing. They do the corn maze. There's haunted houses that are grotesque.
Yeah.
If you drive by, you go, what? This is Utah? And they have. So what's happening?
These people are so happy one day a year they don't have to be Mormon.
For that
whole
I've
always thought of Halloween as the Mormon Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
That kind of is.
Safe with candy. Probably.
No,
do you say that on
sugar
stage?
High.
Did you?
No, I will now.
Yeah, you know, you should definitely say that.
You're saying, did you ask him if he did comedy because he opened for you last night?
Yeah, I know. He brought me up on stage. Yeah.
What Orny's asking.
I was confused because he also threw out the heckler.
I was also the bouncer.
Yeah.
Okay, so this heckler last night, we have Orny Adams. He's our guest. By the way, proper introduction. We have Rodney Norman, also
very funny comedian.
Opened from the state of Utah.
Very funny.
Also comedian Spencer King, not on
didn't
the
open,
show this
didn't
week.
Open.
But
didn't
if
open.
We can shoehorn him on the show, I'm sure he'd love to do a set.
He's welcome.
Here's the deal, Orny. Last night, at the beginning of the show, there was what happened? You were the first comedian on stage.
Well,
Rodney.
Yeah, there was a gentleman and his lady friend sat in the front row, and before the show even started, he was just being very loud and boisterous with the wait staff, with everybody else.
Was he drunk?
Oh yeah, he was well on his way at least.
Well, I think there was something else involved as well. I don't think he was just drunk.
Yeah,
you mean
there was
with
some
a relationship, or you're saying like,
there was other substances involved.
Like he might have been like Ambien or pain medication.
I love Ambien.
Because you couldn't have.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Are you addicted to it?
Yeah, of course.
But how do you get up in the morning? How do you?
Ambien, actually, you don't wake up with much of an issue.
Oh,
but you know
don't?
What? I took no drugs until I started doing morning radio, and I was fine. Then all of a sudden, when you find out that you have to go to sleep at 8:30 at night or 9 or whatever it is, and you got to knock yourself over the head, and you have 1,000 things running through your head, and I know you know what that's like.
Right.
You got to do something to shut it all down.
Right. And you can't masturbate in Utah.
No,
so that's not allowed. Because that's what we do in other states, Keith. We try masturbation. Then we graduate to drugs. You just have to go to Ambien.
So I
just go straight
up
to drugs. Yeah.
Here's what I do. I take an Ambien and I bite it in half, and I put one half of it under my tongue, and the other half I put on my tongue, and I just let the magic occur.
Wow.
And then I'm out. I love Ambien.
Every night?
Oh yeah, of course.
Wow.
Even when I don't even do radio anymore. At the moment, I've got some things brewing that we'll talk about next time. I'm addicted. And so my doctor, who happens to be my neighbor, said, hey, I said, I need a prescription. They go, well, you know, we want to make sure that you're not addicted. I go, oh, no. I am addicted.
Yeah.
I've got to have this stuff. It's not, oh, well, we don't want you to become addicted, because I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm dialed in. Yeah. I've been doing it the last 10 years. But I went on a cruise this past summer, and you go down to La Farmacia down in Mexico, and you can, they say, oh, you have to have a prescription, sir. No prescription, no Ambien. I said, you just go to the right one, they'll give it to you.
Yeah.
It's like $80, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
$80, 30 pills, $2 a night for a good night's sleep.
Don't
would
you already
pay $2?
Have some?
Would you pay $2 for a good night's sleep?
Yeah, the problem is I can't, my system's really sensitive. I can't take anything, or it'll screw me up for days.
So you take nothing?
Wow. Nothing.
So are you able to go to sleep like that?
I can get myself to sleep most nights, yeah. And if I can't sleep, I just occupy myself until I fall asleep. I don't force myself. I don't feel bad. But if if I get 2 hours of sleep, I'm functioning better than 8 hours on Ambien or something like that. Because I've tried some sleep pills, and it throws off my entire rhythm the next day. And then when I'm on stage, I can't get the words out. I'm off by half a second. I'm angry.
Yeah, I'm here's what I like to do. Sometimes if I feel like I'm not going to be able to get to sleep, I take two Tylenol or Advil PMs and an Ambien, and I take myself this close to death. This is what I do every night. I take myself this close to death and just hope I don't overcalculate so that I can get a nice night of sleep. Last night, getting home late, but I knew I had to get up because we had a soccer game this morning for my son. I go, I got to get to sleep right now. So it was two Advil PM and one Ambien. Bite it under the tongue, on top of the tongue.
Yeah.
And I truly believe there are times when I over-medicate to the point where I am this close to death. And I'm going to tell you, that's great sleep.
Yeah. Do you have dreams? Or
no, well, not generally, no. No, generally I'm out. And I'd prefer not to have dreams.
You got to get that the Michael Jackson setup where you have a drip.
Some propofol.
That stuff.
I need the doc.
Yeah, you need that.
Does the doc still have access to the good stuff?
Not that guy, but there's other guys. Your neighbor might.
Yeah, he's in prison, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this heckler last night, you have a code. So whenever you said, because you knew that this guy, back to the heckler Rodney was talking about, this guy was already being loud, he was boisterous, you're saying that he was, you're guessing that he was on some kind of medication in addition
to alcohol. I haven't had somebody thrown out in a law. I mean,
right, it doesn't
usually
happen.
It's bachelorette parties.
Well, I realized that this guy might be a problem, but he was like, he wasn't really trying to mess up the show, he just wasn't smart enough to figure out that he was. And so he would kind of shut up and calm down so he kind of proved that he could pull it off, but just to be safe we worked out a little code.
And the code and is this a standard code?
No, I said sparkling water. He said Diet Coke. I didn't want the people to think I was putting chemicals in my body. So sometimes I put half a Diet Coke under my tongue. Diet Coke PM's the best. So, yeah, no, but this guy, it added to the show, then it took away from the show. We had to get him out of there because it was, like, so bad. I mean, I at one point I looked at him and I said, this is the reason that they basically banned drinking in Utah. You know, this guy.
And got an applause break on that one.
Yeah, then the audience started to yell, get out, man. Yeah. Just get out, asshole. Like, it felt so unlike Utah. You know what I mean? Like, in Utah, when you drive, people, like, sort of slow down going, do you want to get in? Do you want to get in? Did you want to get in? You know, like it felt so un-Salt Lake City. And I go, oh, they're going to turn. And this guy, like we got him to be quiet at times. Then we didn't. And then he left. But his girlfriend stayed. And I was like, thank God. And everyone cheered. And then like 2 minutes later, he appeared out of nowhere at the foot of the stage and wanted to hug me.
That was weird.
Yeah, and then started to call me a homo because I didn't want to hug him. And then declared, I guess you get thrown out if you're funnier than the comedian.
He said that.
He said that.
Yeah, to you.
Yeah, to me. Yeah.
He said that repeatedly.
After he said he was my biggest fan and watched me on YouTube.
And what's weird, that type of situation sucks because you feel like you don't want to – look, I don't think any of us want to throw anybody out.
Especially when it's not sold out. And here I am throwing people out. I was going to throw. I thought maybe I'll just throw out every audience member until there's nobody left. You know,
but this guy is a proclaimed. He says he's a fan. As a matter of fact, he was yelling out one of your bits and wanted you to do one of your bits right away.
That's not even on YouTube. That's what was weird.
So you're saying this guy's a fan out of everybody? This guy, I want to figure out a way to keep him in the game.
And I did the bit out of context to appease the guy, but he was one of those guys that would just scream or say a punch. He was screwing up my rhythm for, you know, like 10 minutes. I go, this guy's got to get out. And then he was bothering the audience and stuff like that. So
I thought he was going to take a poke at Rodney. Then I got near him, and I thought he was going to take a poke at me. And I had my glasses on.
Yeah,
I don't want to get hit again.
Well, where was that other comic who the big Hawaiian guy?
Yeah, he was there.
Yeah,
well, yeah. The guy had moved to the back side of the other side of the room, and Joshua.
Yeah,
he's 400 pounds.
Yeah. I mean,
Samoan Tongan mix.
We're not giving him stage time because he's that funny. He's there to remove people like that. You know,
so
come on.
He was standing over there next to the guy. So I thought, okay, Joshua's got him covered. So I came back over to talk to you and tell you what was going on.
Right.
And as I had my back to you, all of a sudden, Orny's like, hey, what's going on here? I turned around, the guy's headed towards you. I'm like, oh, crap, this could get weird.
Yeah, I thought it was going to get weird. By the way, that guy, he's really funny. He's got that great line about the ukulele, which is...
How do you pull off so many stunning standing ovations?
I don't know. I think my goal when I get up there.
By the way, let me say this. I've had my share. Go ahead.
What Keith just did is an example of what not to do. Because he's so competitive with me. He was so proud of himself that he actually got out a question like that with me, and then he had to inject himself back in it. Yeah. So I think my goal is to, you know, really just pour myself into whatever I do, and I think the audiences are at this time vibing with it, which is cool.
Is it because...
Why don't you tell me when you get standing ovations, well, Keith?
No,
what is your trick?
No, it's rare. I'll be honest with you. It's rare. And it's rare that there's any standing ovations at all at almost any comedy show. A lot of times when I see a standing ovation at Wise Guys, and we've been at this for 15 years, it's a comedian gets it on the way up to the stage.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's more likely, and that's their fame. That's notoriety. That's because they saw them on some movie that they loved or whatever. Yeah. Getting a standing ovation after doing an hour is a different standing ovation. So the standing ovation you're getting is a different standing ovation. I'll tell you who gets standing ovations on a regular basis when they come here. Mm-hmm. Is other than you, Chris Titus. Yeah, he does not get a standing ovation walking to the stage. Mm-hmm. He gets on stage, he kills, he earns it, and people are up on their feet. But guys that get the standing ovation on the way to the stage, it's like, uh-oh,
yeah.
He may have just peaked.
Yeah.
You know, and that's because they saw him in this movie.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's usually that.
And
then that happens actually quite. So if you bring, yeah. And look, you know who they are. I'm not going to name any names. There's no reason to do that. But you know what I'm saying. Guys that are more famous for being famous than they are for being funny.
Yeah.
So that's why they get the standing up.
You know, that's always an awkward moment where they have to go, sit down, chill. You know, I'd make them stand. And then once they say, what, now we're going to sit? What? Who said you could sit? Stand up. You set a precedent. You know what I mean? It's like a relationship. You can't do things at the beginning of the relationship and not expect to carry that through for the entire relationship.
Didn't they do with the Texas A&M football games that the whole crowd stands up until they score a touchdown? So they can't sit down.
Yeah.
So everyone, all the fans stands like, geez Louise, if that happened, like, until I get my first applause break, you all have to stand. We may be here for a while.
I want them up for the hour.
But you stand up, why not then?
Yeah.
You know?
So what's your plan, Arnie? You're hilarious. You're a great comic. You're a great guy. I feel like you're in a great group. Didn't you just did the Just for Laughs? Was that this summer or was that the
– Yeah, I've done it. I've done it almost every year.
So,
I do it.
So when you go do those,
yeah.
And they obviously know who you are. Mm-hmm. You're going. You're doing your thing. You're crushing. Are there meetings after this?
No.
Or is it like
– No.
Because I have another friend of mine who you know well, and it's another guy that you respect. I don't want to call him out. And I love this guy.
Mouth the name. Yeah.
He says he goes there, kills, and no one will talk to him.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll go crush.
He's been one time.
Yeah.
And he did crush. We were on the same show.
Yeah.
But he crushes. He's a crushing act.
But then no one cares.
Yeah.
So he goes, I don't even know what to do, so he still does what he does. He does clubs. And
he does very well.
Yeah, and
corporates,
he does absolutely.
Very well.
But he's like, what do I have to do to get that
thing? I don't go up there looking for the deal. I got a deal the first time I was there when Comedian was filming. I got a deal with Warner Brothers Television, and they were doing Friends and ER and shows like that at the time. Now I go up there, I just try and have fun. This year, I did 20-something shows in 2 weeks. I was doing a one-man.
Wow.
I did a solo show, a one-hour show.
In Montreal?
I did something this year that I'd never had to do, and it actually worked, which was amazing. I had to go from doing – I was doing a solo show in a theater. I did a one-hour show. They got me in a car, shot me across town, put me in a theater with 3,000 people, and within 10 minutes, I was in makeup and on stage doing a 10-minute televised set.
Was that the gala?
The gala, yeah, the gala.
Wow.
And
gala.
Yeah, wow. And I had one of the best sets I've ever had on television.
So what was the result of that? Obviously, it feels good. You killed.
Know, yeah.
And then?
Nothing. In all of its meaning. Listen, I did a gala with Steve Martin. I don't think it gets any bigger than that. He hosted.
Wow.
And, you know, they show that on Air Canada as one of the – and it just – nothing in my life – is getting traction. It's very frustrating. It's upsetting. But the good news is I'm getting more work than I've ever gotten. I feel like I'm writing more than I've ever written. But am I satisfied? I'm not satisfied at all. I mean, I find it horribly tolling on my soul, where I am in my life. I'm in my 40s. I pour my heart into this. I try hard. I love my fans. I hang out with them after the shows. You know, there's nothing fake about what I'm doing, but yet for some reason it isn't going where I thought it would have gone.
Is it possible? I know this sounds outlandish.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to have a part two of Comedian?
I don't think Seinfeld would do it because it wasn't a success, and I think he was upset
now,
that...
Now, it wasn't a financial success, you mean? It wasn't received well by who?
Didn't win an Academy. It wasn't the highest-grossing documentary of all time. You know, if every one of his fans had seen it, it would have been the highest, you know. And I think there was some disappointment. Let me say this. Had that been a success, I would have had a huge career. Doesn't matter how big of an asshole people thought I was or loved me. And it is split down the middle. You know, when I see a comedian in Twitter, I go, oh, this could go either way. Right. You know, when I see Teen Wolf in Twitter, I know it's nothing but love.
So do you, on Twitter and on social media, do you, what is it, mute or whatever? Can you mute out that stuff or do you actually read that stuff?
Fortunately, I don't get a lot of hate stuff, just like I don't get many hecklers. And if I do, whatever. I try not to finish the tweet. I try and move on. I mean, that's their... First of all, most of the time, people are allowed to have their opinion.
Yeah.
It's not my business to try and change your opinion. Hopefully, they've watched maybe my Comedy Central special or my other special, or they've come to see me live. If they haven't, they don't want to give me a fair shot. That's fine. I'm not here to change your opinion, but I'm also not going to allow myself to read it.
I don't believe everyone should be entitled to an opinion. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think there's some people out there that are just hateful.
Yeah.
They're just mean people that are out to try to disrupt someone else's life, and they're not. If it was objective or well thought out, or maybe something else, then maybe I'd be more inclined to listen. But I really hate most of that, and I will mute out the majority of that just because I don't want to see it about you or anyone else. I don't like that even happens. Let me ask you: is there a comedian out there? Is there a way? Is there some? Because you didn't embrace back in the day, you didn't go and hang out at these things and schmooze and hang out with these comics. Is there a way to fix that? Or is there someone out there that if they stood up and said, this dude is a killer?
Yeah. Well, there's
got to be someone that could help because you can back it up.
Well, you know, it's so funny that privately these comedians come up to me, and we're talking about the biggest, we're talking about the hippest, we're talking about the ones that, like, if they said something and they just, you know, one of them came up to me in Montreal and said, you know, he goes, I just saw they were showing you on the plane, and he said, man, that is, you know, some of the funniest, and I said, don't worry, I won't tell your friends you said that. So it's kind of unhip. You know, sometimes. So, and they're scared. But, yeah, I mean, I can't depend on these people. You know, there are plenty of people that could. But if for whatever reason, it isn't happening. But, you know, I what can I do? I can just keep writing, and I can keep being nice. And if it happens, it happens.
You know what bothers me? It bothers me that people won't you're allowed to be nice. It's okay to be nice. It's okay to be helpful. It's okay to be supportive. It's not a competition. It's not just because you have a joke and you have a joke that one of them is going to cancel the other one out. You do your own thing. And it bothers me that someone wouldn't step up and say, because I know you're a crusher. Because I'll tell you what happens to me. I'll put the glasses back on.
All right, here we go. Comedy
club owner. Hey, this is what happens to me. Oh, Orny Adams, how was he? That's what other comics ask. And know what I tell them? He's a crusher. He's great. I tell him exactly, because I'm not going to lie, because we've had discussion, because you ask the same thing. When you, every comic does.
Of course.
Because you say, oh, how was that guy? How's that guy?
Who's selling tickets? I'm most important. Yeah, that's what I care about the most.
You asked me about Ryan Hamilton. How's Randall Hamilton? He's great. Yeah. He's a great friend of ours, of course.
Friend of mine.
He's a great guy. And you ask, so everyone asks different things, but they ask Orny Adams. And sometimes the way they ask, how's Orny, you could tell there's something there.
Huh.
And then I feel like, you know what? I'm not going to fall into what I know what you want me to say. I know exactly what you want me to say.
Yeah, you're smart.
Whoever this comedian is. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I know what you're going to say. You know what I'm going to tell them? I'm going to tell them the truth. I'm not going to lie to them and go down that road and go, oh, yeah, well, he's this or that. Because they'll do that with, there's a lot of comics like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had hundreds of comics at Wise Guys, but I am not going to fall for that. And it bothers me that other people won't do the same. Because, like you said, it's cool to be Oh, well, I don't to kind of crap on you in a way. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but kind of do that. And that's not right, man. I don't know why people feel that they need to do that.
I never felt like I needed to put other people down because I never felt like – I felt like what I was doing was always, you know, different enough. And that's what I wanted to do was position myself in a certain way. But, yeah, it's so strange how unsupportive – at times this community can be, and I just wish that the comedy community as a whole would elevate funny people instead of, because can you imagine how what it would be like for your business if instead of, you know, the people coming out to see comics that they were told are funny because they have a special or they've been put in a movie or whatever for a second, but they came to see the comics that, you know, you said Christopher Titus kill every time. Your club would be filled all the time if they were coming to see funny comics.
You know, one thing we talked about yesterday, Arnie, and is that a lot of the people, a lot of industry will go to these festivals and see these comedians, and I'm familiar with these festivals that are out there, and these agents will get on an airplane out of New York or L.A. and go to some wherever place to go to these festivals to see these comics perform, and a good amount of those comics, God bless them, are open micers that just stare at the floor and mumble.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what about the guys that are crushers? There's real crushers out there right now that are great, they're original, and actually, God forbid, entertaining. What happened to being entertaining?
Right.
People always ask me, oh, why do people go to comedy clubs? No, I tell people, I tell this to comics. No one wants to hear it, by the way. You know why people go to a comedy club? To have fun, to be entertained, to laugh.
Right.
That's why they come. If you ask anyone that walked in that door, they didn't come in to go, oh, because I want to find out what this guy thinks about abortion. That's not why they walk in the door. I wonder what this guy thinks about whatever, Hillary Clinton. I mean, that may be part of the act at some point, but if you ask anyone, they want to be entertained. That is why they go to the comedy show, and that's what I wish there was more of that. But I do feel like a lot of these agents, they got their noses up the behinds of these unfunny, boring, five joke, stare at the floor nerds that are excruciating.
Hmm.
And I want crushers. And I told people, you'd come see this guy. Is a freak. And I said the word crusher, killer. But there are certain guys that do that. There are certain guys that do that, and it comes with experience. It comes with doing it for years and being a professional, and also getting it.
Well, you should tell whoever you speak to, the people, the comics that you love, just keep talking about those comics, and that's what the fans should do, and because that's the only way to get beyond this and get it so it filters up. I mean, it'd be nice if the cream rose.
And I don't know how to change it. I've said what I said, but you know, no one listens. And they'll still go to Austin and look for the nerd with one joke and with the jeans that are cuffed.
You know? There goes my outfit for tonight. Oh, I got to rethink this. I don't know if I packed it. Do we have time to go to Macy's over at the mall, grab some new pants? I could uncover them, I guess.
No, you need to wear the lenses with the glasses with no lenses. You can actually poke through. You got to go with that whole thing. And I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. You can go, well, Keith, you're a hypocrite. Look at your schedule. You book a handful of those nerds because people will go see these guys. And I'll tell you, I won't stay in the room. I can't handle it.
Well, you know, my goal all along was to be entertaining. I knew that not everybody was going to agree with my point of view or think, hey, Grape Nuts is funny. But what I did was I modeled myself after, like, Mick Jagger. Because no matter what, you could say, Rolling Stones, I don't like their music. But you can't argue that it's a spectacle. Something's going on up there. Mm-hmm. He's got different outfits. He's running around. It's chaos. It's exciting. There are anthems being played. You know, and that's what I want people, when they see the show, like, I want them to go, there's something going on there. And that I think is important. So not just the jokes, but it's exciting. And that's why, you know, when I'm up there, my heart's pounding through my chest. I mean, I think sometimes I go, I don't know if I'm going to make it an hour. Like, it's that, the cardio that's involved with the show that I do. And I just hope physically I can keep doing this show because it's exhausting. Every week I'm flying to another city. Every week I'm getting up and doing media. I'm doing afternoon media. I'm doing the shows. I'm doing the meet and greet after the shows, which Brian Regan calls the show after the show. And then it's on to the next city. And as you get older, you go, I don't know, physically, I can do this. You know, they interviewed the BTK killer, the bind him to, and they said, why'd you stop killing? And he goes, I couldn't do it anymore. So even serial killer comes to an end. He just didn't have the knees anymore to serial kill. That's what your listeners are going, what is this comic talking about? He's in his 40s, whether he can physically. Hey, laugh into the mic, Keith. Have you ever done radio before?
Orny Adams, thanks for doing the show, man.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Prediction tonight, two shows, bigger crowds. We know this. I've seen the numbers, so we're going to be good tonight.
Will this air before?
I don't know. We can't. Can we put it up? I got Dylan Mazzioti. I don't even know how to pronounce his name anymore. It's changed. Dylan Mazzioti is our producer. Can it go up? It's going to go up.
There you go.
I think it's worth putting up.
Did I talk too much?
No.
Is your hair real?
Yeah. What do you mean, is my hair real? Yeah, of course.
I love your hair.
Really? No, thank you.
I love your hair. Yeah. I love almost anyone's hair, but I love your hair.
Well, thank you.
It looks good. It has the thing, whatever. Would you use any products?
Yeah, I use several products. I'm using Murphy. It's called Rough Rider right now. I use
Is that horse and mane tail?
No. This is like these are like
it's real stuff.
I have maybe 20 different products that I rotate in, depending on the mood of my hair.
I use bar soap.
Use bar soap.
Bar soap. Is that the problem?
No. It looks good.
It is what it is, man.
It looks good. I mean, you could find thicker headphones to cover up more of your head for the butt. I can't even see.
That's fair enough.
But I will say this, Keith. You're one of the nicest guys. That's why I would do this podcast, because the minute I see you, I like you. You have such a. If I had a tenth of your likability, I'd have a career.
And if I had a tenth of your talent, I'd have one, too.
You do.
Orny Adams, thank you so much. God bless you. Thanks for being on the show. We'll see you tonight. We're going to get this posted. Also, a big thank you to Spencer King for being here. Didn't say a lot, but I love Spencer. He's a great friend, and great to have him here. Also, Rodney Norman, one of my great friends. Rodney's involved heavily at lifting crap and helping us put this new club together, and I would love to have you back soon to play this new club.
This club is amazing. I can tell already.
It's going to be great.
The funny thing is, and you have to understand this, if you're a comic listening, you'll get this. We walked around the entire club, uh-huh. And you showed me everything. You showed me the stage, the green room, the bathroom, the kitchen, with such pride. And then there was a beat, and I said, where do we sell our merchandise? That's all I care about. You're like, well, there are three exits. I go, slow down. One exit, the merch is next to the exit.
Spencer King, thank you so much. Rodney Norman, thank you so much. Also, we had special guests. We got Geek Squad over there. We have Marty Archibald, and of course, my producer, Dylan Mazzioti, also a great friend. Thank you so much. Orny, thank you so much. God bless you. And we'll see you at the show tonight.
Yeah, Deer Hunters.